Well, at least we've got a little bit of drainage here. Some of the fields we go to are so flat and it's been so wet lately, we're going to be, you know, ankle deep in mud.
Well, what fun would it be if we weren't ankle deep in mud?
Well, that's part of the, part of the fun of doing this is getting dirty.
Yep. Beats sitting in the office and doing spreadsheets all day.
Yeah.
After years now of working with Quercus Garriano, we're just beginning to scratch the surface. There is so much more to learn and so much more to do with this fascinating species of oak. Last year's inaugural release of Garriana was a first step in a long exploration. It taught us two important lessons. First, that Garry oak can help make an incredible whiskey. And second, while we had come to understand that this is a rare, challenging, and complex oak to work with, because there is no roadmap, because there is so little documentation of its properties, it is going to require a lot more of us to succeed long-term. We must invest ourselves holistically, stewarding the process from sourcing to seasoning, milling to coopering. Only then can we truly begin to understand how we might take advantage of everything this wood can give us. The first big takeaway from last year was that we were lucky, extremely lucky. We happened across a mill owner outside Salem, Oregon, that had been sitting on a mountain of unwanted air-dried Garry oak. It was exciting, no doubt, and we bought up every last bit of it. But at the same time, it was our first awakening to the harsh reality that Garry oak, usable Garry oak, is really difficult to find. Rather than breaking our spirit, though, we found resolve. We embraced the fact that if we want to keep expanding our native oak series, we have to work hard to hunt this oak down. This winter, we returned to Southern Oregon to continue the pursuit.
Look at this. Sweet home.
All right. This looks amazing.
Yeah.
Can we just open? I think we'll just open this gate. Yeah.
Look at this.
Are there other thickets like this out there?
There are. There's quite a few around here. All of it just natural oak.
Very cool.
See how they are? Just some of them are grown up straight and nice and clean. Yeah. The trunks are perfect.
So this is cattle land, right? This is...
totally ranch land.
Yeah. And that's why it's so clean here in the underbrush.
Yeah. Yeah, the cattle have kind of pushed it all down, and it gives the oaks a lot of room to grow, and they're quite happy here.
So this is really like, you know, the kind of classical Garry oak savannas that we've been hearing so much about from our restoration efforts, except that back in those days, they were using controlled burns and everything, and here they've got cows.
Yep.
We're keeping this thing pretty clear.
Yeah,
pretty remarkable.
Keeping it open and clear and not managed, not a professional forest at all. They're just nobody growing professionally, you know, growing Garriana oak. It's just a natural product that's here that they've been calling waste wood for years.
Yeah.
Heating their homes with them.
Oh, that's tragic.
Yeah, all that wonderful flavor going away.
Oh, man.
It's pretty impressive considering how close this was to, you know, a lumber town that none of this was cleared and cut down already.
Yeah. Well, you know, they clear all the trees they were using. They're just not, they weren't using these. And it's been considered a waste wood for years and years. You'll see it all pushed up into piles and going away and... boy, some of these trunks are just beautiful.
The branching structure is like something out of a Tim Burton movie.
Our goal for this trip was to source the 50,000 board feet of Garry oak that we need to build the 500 casks our plan calls for over the next 5 years. After learning about the surprisingly large amount of wood we need to make just one cask, the realities of the math quickly set in. We need to find a lot of locations with a lot of trees. We started by visiting a cattle ranch outside Brownsville. The thing with Garry oak is there's no established economy for it. We can't sit at a computer in Seattle, order from a cooperage online, and have it arrive on our doorstep. We need to create the economy, put in the miles, meet the people. We need to assemble a network that can consistently supply us with the volume and quality that we need to meet our vision for the program. It all starts with our good friend, Todd Dollinger, the owner of our cooperage, Rewind. He's one of the area's leading oak savants. This guy's like a bloodhound for Gary Oak.
So to get all the wood that we really need to find a stand like this size.
And... Oh, no. We need to find 15 stands like this. Oh, no.
Well, because, yeah, I mean, out of you know, one of these perfect trees that's here,
yeah,
you know, these are growing wild, so very few of them are beautifully straight. And even out of one of those, you might get, what, 4 or 5 barrels worth at
best? Correct. You know, like, at most.
So That's the challenge here.
We need a lot of trees. We need a lot of really nice logs.
Yeah.
And they're out there, but it's a matter of finding them and finding the people that have them, because they're just not commercially harvested very much. Yeah. So this is you know, meet the farmer and the farmer's fields and go there. You're not going to get it from a logging company. Right. It's not going to happen.
Well, but meeting the farmer and seeing the farmer's fields is all an exciting part of it. Like, you get to see something like this where it's like, okay, this is clearly like this is a rocky soil sort of place, you know, to be able to classify oaks that we source into different terroirs and cherish those things, you know, to highlight those characteristics and make barrels from those directly.
Like we were talking about, this, patch of oak, this whole field, none of the oaks are really as old as what we're looking for. These, you know, a lot of these trunks, you know, maybe 100 years old or 150, but they're just, the diameter's so small, by the time we get rid of the sapwood and the bark and get down to the good heartwood, there's just not a lot of lumber there. We need larger diameter trees to
and
do that.
And that's part of the problem, isn't it, is that when these trees are growing, there's a good amount of sapwood relative to heartwood.
Absolutely.
You know, we've got this kind of log here that we've got right next to us that's down. It looks like somebody cut it up for firewood, and it had split into two, but even still on the two sides, you know, there's probably 2 inches of sapwood in the radius and probably only, what, 5 or 6 inches of heartwood there?
So correct. Like, and then by the time you mill that and get away from the round of it, there's really not more than a few board feet in there.
Right. So this
so
log, which
is
8 feet long.
So if we have a giant log that looks like enough to build a house, it's really only maybe 1,000 feet of wood.
Yeah.
And that's just not that many. This little thing is 30 feet of wood.
Yeah.
You know, not enough.
Yeah.
Not enough. And then you've got to have good wood for a barrel. It's got to be pristine. It can't have checks and splits or knots. And so all of a sudden you're down to 20 or 30% of a good log.
Sure.
And a big
and
log.
Finding a good log in a field like this, I mean, what are we talking about? Maybe 1 in 100?
In this field?
That,
yeah. Maybe, you know? 1 in 100.
So
yeah. Other areas that are older, we're going to find more.
Yeah.
But you're still going to hunt and peck to find that straight log, that straight grain, without a bunch of knots. And so they're a pretty special log to find the right one.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I know we've got a few on our journey we're going to look at that are big, straight, clean. And you can look at the tree and see how it's growing. Every now and then you'll see one that's kind of twisted, when you can see the bark pattern, and it'll tell you what the grain's doing underneath. So when you look at them and you see the grain's got a twist or a movement in it, that'll tell you what's going on inside. Huh. So when the bark looks nice and straight and the tree is straight, usually the inside is. There's one over here you can look at and see the knot about 4 feet off the ground. The bark is showing what's going on.
Sure.
Inside there, there's a fracture. That tree had a lot of wind damage, and so that was healing after it was fractured when it was young.
It's like a scar.
It's a scar. It's exactly what it is. And it's got a damage inside. If we mill that, we're going to find out inside it's probably got a crack or a check in there.
Sure.
And so that piece of wood's going to be flawed.
Hmm. Yeah. This is wild. I mean, people have no idea that how difficult this actually is to get the quality of wood that you need, or even just to, frankly, just to get the wood in the dimensions that you need to make a cask. I mean, people are so, you know, used to these kind of managed oak forests wherever they make them grow straight and tall, and they grow wild like this, and they kind of have this natural tendency to branch out, and there's nobody there, you know, protecting them from anything. You know, the availability of these to us is
Well, it's pretty limited.
For so many years, this has been garbage wood. For so many years, this is firewood. They heat their homes with it. Nobody wanted it. Nobody was working with it. Yeah. A few guys started making flooring out of it. And then there's a few pioneers like you that are making spirits out of it.
Yeah, well, and more these days, and that's an exciting thing.
Yeah.
It's good. Let's put it to good use.
So, Todd, we really need to find dozens and dozens more stands of this size, right?
Absolutely. We need to scour Oregon and Flyers, and we need to hit all the avenues we can. We've got to go to the farm stores, to the lumber yards, to the other mills, to the people that aren't doing this, to find out to the people that are doing it, to find out who's got it, who's got a stash of it, and who's willing to sell it.
We've got to get hunting.
We need to go shopping.
Yeah. Open season on the oak right now.
And shopping for oak is not like going to the lumber yard, not for Oregon oak.
I'm looking forward to the experience.
Because there is no established market for Gary Oak, we have to be creative. We have to get out there, talk to people, ask questions, and be willing to track down even the smallest stashes of oak. Sometimes we'll find a large, professionally run yard with scores of oak properly milled and stickered. Sometimes we'll be pointed to small rural farms cutting lumber for friends, family, and neighbors. And sometimes it's literally the single odd tree that fell down in someone's yard. Everything's worth investigating. Todd set up appointments for us at a few spots while we were down there for a few days. But we also spent time preparing for our next trip to the area by posting oak wanted signs in lumber and feed stores. We were lucky enough to run into a couple folks that had smaller piles lying around.
And so we're meeting people and putting things on signs because that's where the Oregon oak is. It's in the farms. It's in the little properties.
Well, we have two dead ones I know about right now.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, please get a hold of me. We'll follow up.
Well, I'm going to be going home in about 15 minutes.
Good. Well, thank you. My name's Todd.
Hi, Todd. I'm Shauna.
Honey. Shauna, nice to meet you, Shauna. Thank you so much.
Funny how things work out, right?
You never know. Thank you. And that's how we do it.
That's it, man.
That's exactly how we do it.
These are great opportunities, but the fact remains, we need a lot of oak. We'll take the odd fallen tree here or there, but we need larger, steadier supplies. Before we headed out of town, we posted more flyers and talked to some local shop owners. You never know which handshake can lead to the next big treasure trove of Gary Oak. We meet some great people along the way, but each new friend only reminds us of the steep hill we have to climb. Not only is this stuff hard to find, but there are obstacles every step of the way. Hidden markets, local regulations, regional nuances, and inconsistent terminology.
We're actually going to put these up. I have a question for you. We've got these little flyers we're going to put up. Is anybody going to know what Gary Oak is?
That ran through my mind.
Are we going to need to write under here, Oregon?
Oregon White Oak.
Because I don't think they're going to know.
Yeah. Well, we can get ourselves.
Can I keep one with you?
Can we buy
so
a
you
Sharpie?
Can show people?
Sure. Yeah.
Please.
Yeah. Alaska.
And I very much appreciate it.
I bet in Victoria they would know.
They do. I was just up there a month ago doing a whiskey show up there, and I thought I was being clever by bringing up, we have this whiskey called Garryana, so the botanical name for the tree is Quercus Garryana, and I was up there, I was like, hey, do you know this is your local oak species? And they were, all of them were like, yes, we know. They all know what Gary Oak is up there. It's pretty remarkable. They know a lot about it. In Washington State, very few people know about it. People know about it here, but it's known as Oregon Oak, of course.
Oregon Oak. But it is probably a growing awareness that the local valley where the Indians were here was Oak Savannah.
Right.
And so there is a bit of a movement to preserve that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've discussed that. There's quite a bit. And now the different municipalities are saving the trees. You know, in Salem, you can't cut them.
Okay.
Okay. Unless if it's larger than a certain size, you're not allowed to cut it.
Yeah.
It's a very different experience from Europe, where they have these kind of managed forests, and they make them grow all. It's like, you know, they're farmed. But here, it's, you just kind of go out and you know somebody who knows somebody.
It's still the Wild West.
It is still really the Wild West. And that's, but that's part of the fun of it, you know? And that's what we're trying to kind of capture is that feeling, because it's the truth.
I was explaining to Matt as we were driving by some of the farms out here, so I was stopping at some of them and kind of looking and wished I had my binoculars so I could see who's got a mill stuck out in the field behind something, kind of like Sam McCrupp's got. You know, there's so many of them around, but you don't really know who's actually running it. And yeah, there's lots of little mills set up, and there's just so many nice stands of oak around here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, again, thank you very much.
All right. Yes, yeah, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for being a part of this.
Luckily for us, our new friends from the store in Brownsville had a lead. Just a 20-minute drive down the road outside of Halsey was a small, family-run farm that sounded promising. A quick phone call and we were headed west to meet up with Samuel and his son Norman to check it out.
So Matt, now that we're done out at the forest of oak out here north of Brownsville, you know, I wanted to share with you that the next mill we're going to, I was in town here and I was shaking hands and I was talking to people, and the clerk at the lumberyard told me about a guy who has a mill. And so that's how we're finding it. We're putting up flyers and we're meeting people and we're just talking to local people to see who's local, who's cutting wood.
Samuel, this is Tyler.
Hi, Tyler.
This is Matt.
Hey, nice to meet you.
Good to meet you.
Matt, Samuel, Tyler, Norman.
Norman, Tyler, nice to meet you. Good to meet you. Hey, Matt.
This
nice
property has been in the family since 1938.
36.
Wow. Your grandfather?
Yes.
He bought the property, and you were you born here?
No, I was born in Iowa.
In Iowa?
Yeah, moved here in 62.
In 62?
Yeah.
Okay. But it's been in your family for whatever, 80 plus years.
Yeah.
Good for you. Good for you. And you've got 350 acres, is that right?
Something like that.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And we're cutting Oregon oak.
Yeah.
I always was intrigued with the idea of getting boards out of a log.
Yeah, well, I can see that you've got a few logs here.
Yes,
yeah. Two or three at least.
Thank you.
How long has this log been down?
3 or 4 years.
Excellent.
Oh, wow.
Excellent. Nice to hear. I'm eager to see what we got.
We want to buy wood, sure, but we're not necessarily looking for wood that's ready to go right now. If we can find some of that and make casks right away, that's great. That's a bonus. But for the most part, once we buy the wood we're hunting for now, we'll have to season it for at least 3 years before we can use it. And after we use it to make casks, then it's going to be another 3 to 5 years before we've got whiskey to put into a bottle. So when we're out hunting, learning as much as we can about Gary Oak is as much a part of the process as writing a check.
Yeah. How big of a log can you do on this saw?
We have not done that big, but others with the same size mill have done 8-foot in diameter.
Whoa.
Wow.
Yeah. I thought you'd be impressed with that.
What's the biggest diameter you've done?
Oh, 4 foot, maybe a little more.
Yeah.
Something like that.
That's still a large impressive. Tree.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait till you see this saw run. Have you seen one of these run?
Yeah.
You'll be thrilled with it. Because this is not a bandsaw blade. This is a saw blade rather than
circular
a bandsaw.
Saw.
Right.
Okay, so it makes a different kind of cut. And you'll look, it'll cut a horizontal in one direction and vertical in the other.
I've seen one of these before, yeah.
Okay, we had one, I think, actually. up in Mahala.
Yeah, I've seen one in Washington.
But it's a great way to work in the saw.
What we've got here is we've got wet lumber. It's a bit green still, quite frankly.
So this tree had been kind of sitting and drying for how long?
It's been down for, it looks like, a couple of years, but I don't know that it's really dried out that much. Because
tree.
Of the shade in here and the moisture in here, it probably hasn't really had a chance to actually dry out or season out very well. And certainly cutting them and stickering them gets it. You can feel how heavy this is.
Right.
It's really wet, okay? A lot of moisture, nice and clean, straight grain. Look how straight this grain is.
Right.
It's gonna bend beautifully. You've got, when you see a grain like this, it's always tattletale sign of where the knot is.
Sure.
Okay, it's always that way. It's got a lot of character, but this grain's gonna bend a little differently than that grain.
Okay,
it's gonna be harder. The darker wood is a little harder. So when you get a knot, it's kind of a critical thing. Even though you're not in it, next to it can be a little bit funny.
Huh.
So this would be a piece we would use for a head.
I see.
So we're not bending it. All of this would bend beautifully. This is beautiful, perfect wood for that. Okay? All right. You know, this piece here, we're right off the edge of the knot.
Yep.
See here, look at how the grain's going.
Oh, sure,
This is an issue when you're bending.
Yeah.
Look how straight all that grain is there. And it's absolutely a perfect cut for that. But the heart of this tree, and he's not down into the big core yet, he's just kind of barely touching the edge of it. But it's a really nice piece of wood. It's dark in color a little bit for a lot of the oak, which is a good sign. It means it's a little harder.
Right.
The darker wood's gonna be a little harder. But beautifully straight grain.
Yeah.
Beautifully straight grain. If you can feel my excitement, I don't know if you
can
sense it.
I
but I'm excited to see this.
It's
really, It's a beautiful piece. I'm excited to see what you can do with it.
This is the name of the game. There's just not a system in place to take advantage of all the oak that's actually out there. So we have to seek out folks like Samuel and Norman. We have to form meaningful relationships with more and more people that can teach us about this unique species of oak and also help us to secure it for years to come. But we won't pretend it isn't a lot of fun.
Can any of you tell me which six U.S. presidents are not buried on U.S. soil? Not in or on U.S. soil.
No.
There are six of them.
Really?
Yeah.
Who?
The six that are still alive.
Hey. Look at this.
Smart man.
Come for the oak, stay for the entertainment.
You can do stand-up.
Of course, there's business to be done as well. We're fortunate to have Todd on our team. He's been in the industry for decades and just has a knack for this. He knows his stuff and he'll make sure we get exactly what we need. He's also a stand-up guy, which is really important to us here at Westland. We want to get a good deal, but we also want to be doing things the right way and doing right by our partners.
Are you used to paying? What are you?
I'm paying, depending on what it is. If I can get stuff that's seasoned, beautiful, dry, ready, I'm paying as much as three. I prefer to pay two. Okay? Okay? And a buck and a half has been a lot of what's going on, but two's fair. Especially 1,000 feet at a time. You want to give it a shot? Will that work?
How does it get from here to up to your place?
I'll pick it up.
You pick it up.
I'll pick it up. Mm-hmm. I'll come here, give you $2,000, you give me 1,000 feet of lumber. Whenever you're ready. Every time you're ready.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
I think we can probably work with that.
We can do that?
You talked of three, and I was...
Are you excited? I know.
I was kind
but
of
it's green. But it's green. I got to sit on it for 2-3 years. Not dry.
Do you air dry it, or do you...
Got to air dry it. Can't curl dry it. So I got to sticker it, and then sit it outside and look at it.
Yeah.
No, but if you keep doing this, what we're doing here, we're going to be bringing you wood. You're going to go pick up wood. We're going to negotiate other logs that are... Because you don't have enough wood here.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Samuel's property was a great find, no doubt, but the truth is, we constantly feel like we're behind, even when we find success. We bought some wood here and made a great new friend we'll work with for years to come, but we need to find more people and a lot more oak.
What have we done so far?
We, as far as here?
Yeah, just...
I put an order in for as much as they can cut.
And how much is that gonna be?
Don't know, we're gonna do 1,000 feet at a time and find out.
Okay. Perfect.
As many thousands as you can do. How many thousands are you going to do?
I don't know.
Don't, then that's what we're going to buy.
Go until we find out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. As much as they can get ready, I'm going to buy.
Okay.
We like the way we saw the wood getting milled. I like it a lot. They're going to mill it our way, so I'm going to buy it.
Perfect.
Excellent.
I can't have anything. I don't see any reason why not. Okay. I see every reason
Absolutely.
Why to.
Yep.
So, okay.
And we'll keep.
We were talking about
and
it. Norman and I were talking as well. And Samuel and I made a deal. We shook hands.
Good.
It's a deal.
I mean.
So I say, I was disappointed. I didn't see a building full of ready-to-go lumber. It should be. They've got it down. They just didn't know what to do with it.
Well, I mean, that's what we're here to figure out with everybody.
We're here to teach them.
Yep.
No. And I know there was somebody over in Monroe at one point.
I think there is.
Yeah. I just got to go scouting a little further.
Yeah.
Knocking on more doors. The shy guy I am, though, I'll go find him. Yeah, you ask enough people, you can get there.
That's true. Yeah.
You try to do it with a smile and a thank you.
The next day, we were up early to chase down more potential sources and partners. At the top of our list was an outfit called Gobi Walnut, who owns a yard in Aurora, Oregon, and a mill up in Portland.
The real contrast between yesterday and today is yesterday we have a farmer who's got a mill, who's kind of doing it on the fly, doesn't really understand or know the ins and outs of hardwoods and how you preserve them, how you store them, and or how you properly dry them. Because you can see the ends of the woods weren't protected, not really in it for the money.
Right.
These guys are as good as it gets. They're in it as a wholesaler,
to set it all up where they can market their wood and have the highest quality woods. So they're cutting them well, they're preserving them well, they're protecting them well, and then after they cut them, they're doing the right job of drying them. They're stickering them beautifully, the right amount of stickers, the right amount of space, space between the boards. They're doing a whole lot of things very, very right.
What was exciting about the prospect of visiting an operation that worked professionally from field to finished board was the opportunity to go even deeper into the science of Gary Oak, to really understand as much as we could so that we could apply it to coopering casks and ultimately making whiskey.
The big thing, though, is the unknown of flavor. There are, for a number of cooperages, there are established profiles of oak flavor that you can get from toasting and charring. Some of them even offer it as like a map. You can say, okay, I want to have this flavor, therefore we will toast for you for this temperature for this long, and we'll raise it to this temperature for this long. That's very cool, but that's something that Gary Oak doesn't quite have yet. It's not been mapped, but it's kind of the exciting thing, actually, is we are really just beginning to understand this oak. Where it grows certainly is part of it, its background, its struggles, but also how it's used. I mean, the story of the cooper and Gary Oak is a fascinating one because they have this trade just like us, where we've been around for centuries, and now you're basically being presented with this new thing. And you may have mastered French oak 100 years ago in your cooperage, and you're being presented with this entirely new species, and you have no idea what your same toasting techniques are going to do to the flavor. It's pretty exciting.
Visiting with Phil at Gobi's Lumberyard was eye-opening, to say the least. Honestly, it's tough to know exactly where to start. We certainly got our hands on some incredible stocks of high-quality Gary Oak. And in the process, we picked up a ton of information about the species itself, where it's found, how it's properly handled, and how we might coax out its wonders to create world-class whiskey.
Hey, guys.
How's it going?
Phil.
I'm Matt. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Hey, Tyler.
Tyler, nice to meet you.
Hi, Phil.
Nice to see you again, Tyler.
Nice to see you.
Welcome to Gobi's Air Drying Yard.
I'd like to show them some of the oak logs, if we could.
Absolutely.
Let's take a little tour here.
Yeah. Come on through. Most of what we have right here is fir, but we have a few fairly good-sized oak logs right here.
Wow, these are giant. How old would you say some of these logs are?
Probably at least 100. Yeah. Came from a farm off Savi's Island.
Okay.
And the farmer took it down because some of it was dangerous, some of it was needing to come down, and he wanted to expand on his farmland. So most of what we get is dead and dying and urban salvage. So if it's healthy, we prefer not to take it down.
Yeah. Fair enough. Do we want to walk over and look at the other lumber?
Let's take a look at what we got.
We've already got. Can you show us what we've already got? Yeah. The 5/4, 4/4. And I've been pretty excited about it, shared it with them and sent pictures, so eager to show them the wood itself.
Yeah, most of what we cut is going to end up as flooring.
Right.
So we generally cut it at 4 or 5/4. We do have some oak slabs. We have some 12/4 stock. We have some 6 and 8/4 stock, generally for furniture makers.
Right.
But most of what we cut is going to be for flooring. Because there's a resurgence now. People want oak. They want oak flooring.
Yep.
We'll head down that way.
I have a question for you here. And before we get there, we got white oak here. How long has this been aged?
That has been aged since 2014. So the here is what it was cut in.
And this is the 5/4.
There's a mix. There's 12/4, 8/4, 5/4, and 6/4.
Now, what we purchased right over here is 5/4.
5/4, and then there's 4/4 as well.
And then 4/4 as well. Did I miss this, or was this not here?
It was here.
Okay, how did I miss it? Okay.
there's a lot to see around here, and it's overwhelming.
Okay. So then this 5/4 is available for us if we want to go for it. Because it's properly aged. It's something we can work with.
That's exactly what we're looking for.
It is.
In addition to that, we're looking for all of it.
Yep. And so all of this here is what we've got working with.
Okay.
All of this.
The whole thing.
All of it.
So this is 5/4 and 4/4 along here.
And the 5/4 is right here. Yeah. And then we start the 4/4 there.
Yeah, it is.
So this is all here. This is what we're already purchasing right now.
Yep.
Okay. Great. And this is what we've also negotiated.
Yeah.
And this is the cut date here, the 9/2016.
That is the cut date, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
so as you can see, quite a bit different in age. And this was done in May.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know.
So 4 months.
Until we can look at the cut dates and
color.
Yep. And mostly what we cut is VG. Vertical grain.
Okay.
It's mostly, I'm sorry.
Vertical grain or.
Yeah. Properly cut.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you look at the end of the woods, you know, you can see here where we've cut, how clean it is. This one here's pretty close to quarters on. This one's dead on the money. Mm-hmm. You can see the mullioray tubes
right
here. So it's exactly a perfect
generally
cut.
Generally, when you cut that way, you get this what's called fleck. It's the figure that comes out in the wood.
Uh-huh.
So these barrels are going to look awesome.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of it, I'm not sure if you're aware, but these are hollow. And that the reason they need to be quarter sawn for wine barrels, and especially with the French oak and others, that they won't leak. Because if you cut them the other direction, liquid can flow through.
Exactly.
Like a straw.
Okay. Yeah. Material.
So we wax the logs when they come in, and then once it's cut, we re-wax the ends of these.
Yeah. You guys have done a really nice job of milling. You really do a nice job.
Thanks.
Look at this board. Look at the rays in this.
On that.
Look how perfect this piece of wood is. You just don't get that unless you cut it right on the money.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's been really interesting. That the reason I got involved with them is I was buying walnut from the original owner in Albany. And then when he was purchasing the company, I just kind of volunteered myself to help out. And,
awesome.
And now I am pretty much helping running the entire company.
Nice.
So
it's wild.
It's been,
like
I mean, I've learned so much about trees and lumber and
whole
industry and stuff.
Yeah, we're kind of having a similar experience. You know, like that's why we're doing all of this. Like, we, in the distilling business, people tend to be pretty separated from their suppliers. And, and you know, if you get into lumber, like, nobody has any idea what's going on in lumber. So with this in particular, like with this story, we think it's really important that people learn everything there is about the process, not just about what we do when we get those barrels, but how much goes into it.
Right.
And then also the state of the industry, like, around it. You know, this is, I was talking to some people yesterday, and we were kind of talking about how this is the Wild West, essentially. Like, in France, they have all these systems set up, and the relationships have been formed over hundreds of years.
Yep.
And they know exactly what to do. They've got everything mapped. And part of the excitement of all of this for us, and hopefully for everybody else too that we work with, is we get to figure all this stuff out.
Yeah.
Which is really, really cool. And luckily we're in a position now where consumers care about that sort of stuff. So we can, you know, capture all of this stuff and tell the story. 15 years ago, nobody would have cared.
Right.
You know?
I mean, same thing in the lumber industry. People get their wood and they want to know where it came from.
Yeah.
And we can almost trace every single log back to its origin.
Yeah.
You know?
That's awesome.
Like, we even got some of the walnut trees that were in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
No kidding.
Where Jack Nicholson jumped out on that tree, we got some of those trees.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I want to say that Bono from U2 got one of the slabs from that tree. Maybe. That's the story we're telling.
All right. Yeah. I see.
Nice.
Suffice it to say, we made swift progress with Phil at the yard, and we got pretty damn nerdy with him. There was so much high-quality Gary oak to be had there, some of which Phil and Todd had already set aside for us, and a lot of which we just found on-site digging around a bit in the stacks. We all wanted to get down to business, but frankly, we were having too much fun. Phil in particular wanted to flip the conversation and talk a bit more about whiskey.
But
we were never short on words
with
that subject, so we started talking,
enough, like,
and yes,
like
drinking some Westland whiskeys. Including a splash of what is now pretty scarce, a stashed away bottle of first edition Gary.
We'll make 1,000 barrels in a year. So it's still really, really rare for us, but we're trying to build it as a program because everybody appreciates what it is. It helps tell the story. It's something that really resonates with people globally. You know, it's something that people get excited about. You know, people in France or Japan getting to experience a brand new species of oak that nobody's tasted before.
It's really funny because when I first started working for this company, I'm like, why don't they use Western oak? Why don't they use the Gary? And because it's always been American oak.
Yep.
And anybody in the Midwest is like, no, no, we won't touch that stuff. We won't touch that stuff. I'm glad you guys are actually experiencing it, developing it, and making it real. I mean, it just made sense.
The great thing about working with this wood is how different the flavor profile is compared to American white oak, which is, you know, caramel, vanilla, and general baking spices. This stuff really imparts a nice, smoky, savory barbecue sauce note with, like, undertones of molasses and
lots of dark spices.
Dark spices.
Like heavy clove.
Yeah,
it's really blackberry jam. Yeah. It's really cool. And part of what we're doing with the Garyana whiskey is exploring, we're trying to tease the kind of different flavors out, right?
Right.
We want to showcase its versatility a little bit. Yeah. But, you know, into the future, one of the things that we're really big on, especially once we kind of get going here, you know, if we get a relationship going with you guys and we can continue to buy from you guys for a long time, is we can talk about where it's coming from, like, okay, here's this island, like, let's... Like, what's the climate like there? What's the soil type? And we kind of want to, like, map, like, the different areas where it grows and see the kind of different characteristics of the tree.
That's easy enough, super,
super exciting for us.
Especially since you guys already do a great job of kind of mapping and following the tree from its origin. That'll really help us tell our story in the future.
Exactly.
Cool. I'm glad we're able to help out.
Yeah.
This idea of mapping the different regions of Gary Oak and experimenting with their influence on the final whiskeys has been something we've been obsessing over ever since this visit with Phil. This is an entirely new species of oak for the whiskey industry, completely uncharted territory. That's exciting in and of itself, but to take it one step further and truly explore microclimates and terroirs was a thrilling concept.
42 years now.
As we headed for Gobi's Mill in Portland, we couldn't keep our imaginations from running wild.
We specialize in Northwest hardwoods, mostly walnut, but we also do a lot of maple and oak.
But the Gary Oak program has gone from 5 casks a year, starting in 2011 to, you know, this last year we did 25, and we want to keep that growing as we grow. We released this whiskey we called Garyana, the botanical name, and it was like a huge success, not just locally, but globally, because in 700 years of whiskey, it's very rare that like a new oak comes onto the scene. Basically, everybody knows American oak, Quercus alba, they know French oak, they know the Japanese oaks, but this is a brand new thing. And it's been really popular, it's great.
700 years of whiskey,
but the problem is finding it. And I think the more interesting things about it, I mean, the real challenge is that there's no... In France, all the stuff is already figured out. They've already got it mapped where all of the oaks come from, what they taste like if they come from this region. And we know none of that right now. And that's something we're actually really excited about exploring. So, and that's like we're actually, I mean, we're working, we're not just kind of messing around right now.
In France, all the stuff is already figured out. They've already got it mapped.
But we are here to try to figure out how to source oak, not just now, but years into the future.
We know none of that.
Sure.
Right now. And that's something we're actually really excited
about. Capturing all of that is,
and that's like we're actually
an integral part of the whole experience. Like this is the, now, this is the Wild West, so to speak, of whiskey. There's nothing exciting like this happening in Scotland because it's already been figured out.
Capturing all of that.
The process of figuring it out is super interesting to
people. Part of the whole experience.
It's part of our story.
This is the Wild West, so to speak.
Yeah, well, that's great. We have a way of tracking all of our logs down to individual purchases, too, so we can give you the backstory on where the material is coming from.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
So we've got units tagged that ties back to the log numbers, that ties back to the purchase. And if need be, we can talk to the farmer, the landowner, whoever it is, and get more information for
you
guys.
That's
perfect.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, what we're looking for in the long run is to be able to map where the trees are coming from, to know as much as we possibly can about the tree, the soil, the climate, everything, and then the backstory of the people behind it.
Yeah, I mean, what we're looking for in the long run is to be able to map where the trees are coming from, to know as much as we possibly can about the tree, the soil, the climate, everything, and the backstory of the people behind it.
I don't blame Aaron for looking at us with one eyebrow raised at first. What were these whiskey distillers from Seattle doing poking around here? oak has only recently started to see a bit of resurgence. Not long ago, most people thought of it as garbage wood. But now it's coming back into fashion. Both Aaron and Phil spoke to us about it, and we'd be kidding ourselves if oak's renewed popularity for flooring mostly didn't add to our headwinds.
So the oaks come in
it's just another thing we have to manage,
ways, really.
And another reason why it's so important to be establishing these relationships
salvage,
with the people that are closest
so
to the source.
We get a lot of the oak that way, too. So the bigger oaks, we'll pick up one by one. We have a crane truck, so we'll go to Farmer Joe's farm and take one of his logs or 10 of his logs. Sometimes they come from people's backyards, yeah. Farms, planting strips. Yeah. So the second way we get oak is out of the woods, and that'll come from a forester usually. And they're small batches as well, just because it's hard to find a big concentration in these parts, but usually 1 to 3 or 4 loads at a time.
And what is that forester bringing you? What is... How does the average transaction work like there?
Usually the forester is tasked with bringing down a bunch of fir, and the oak is almost looked at as a trash species for them. So we'll get approached with the odd hardwood species like oak or maple, and they'll make us an offer or invite us out to bid on the logs.
Yeah, it's interesting. We're at, you know, farmer's place yesterday, and he's saying that most people just cut them down, or when they fall down, they'll just burn them for firewood. And
all the time.
It's tragic.
We go out to bid on stands, and then we'll see a bunch of stumps. I'm like, what happened to that material? Oh, we didn't think it was worth anything, so we cut it up and burned it. I'm glad we found you guys.
Well, since I've worked for this company, which has been about 8 years now, it went from like a few inquiries, a few people wanted it, to now it's like on a weekly basis, people are like, hey, do you have 8-quarter oak? Do you have 12-quarter oak? You know, this mm-hmm. and that. And it's like amazing because nobody liked oak 10 years ago. Nobody wanted oak 10 years ago because it went out of style. Everybody wanted walnut. Mm-hmm. Now walnut's still getting bigger, but now oak's, you know, on the rise. Mm.
Interesting.
Yeah, that was part of the story. Like last year, the place we sourced from, this guy had kind of had some cut in kind of rough proportions like this, and he couldn't sell it to save his life. You know, some stuff sitting around, he said, oh yeah, this has been here for 7 years and this for 5. And, you know, for us, that's like, holy smokes, that's, you know,
perfect.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Because that's, you never find anything like that. Like, that's, I don't think it's ever been done in whiskey, something that's been aged that long. We bought all that he had, which wasn't that much, all things considered, but it's funny how it's unloved, you know? I think that's like the most fascinating part of the whole story is...
It was unloved. I think now definitely, you know, it's become more and more and more popular.
Like everything else in this process, milling is an art, something that needs to be done thoughtfully and with precision. Aaron and his guys at Gobi are pros.
Like one of the most
They're by no means one of the big guys. It's not a giant mill,
it's really
but more
unstable.
Of a boutique or artisan operation. But they are some of the most
the
talented guys we've come across yet.
All be under like a
in just a short afternoon,
shed,
we learned so much
have
from
shade
them.
Dry up so sunlight doesn't even get to it because it's that touchy.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
That's really cool. Can you talk more about that?
Sure.
Yeah.
So
I like that shade is a real important thing because you just cook it in the sun. You really want to air dry without cooking it or soaking it.
Yeah. Ideally, it would be under a big lean-to or shade dry. The ends especially are really susceptible.
Yep.
So as long as the material is covered, really that's the main thing, and the ends are waxed. But to restrict the airflow so it's not drying too quickly, and then also to keep it out of the way of the sun, really prevents the surface from drying too quickly, which results in end checking and all sorts of other problems. So, I mean, oak is just so notorious for having tension also that when we're buying stands of oak, we don't take any branches or uppers. So all of that goes to firewood. We're only taking the trunk.
Yep.
It's the branches just from being up in the air and blowing around have so much tension. By the time you go to mill it, the board is...
when you run a piece through the saw, and it could be an absolutely straight board, you start to push it through and you start to see it going like this, you can get this far from the end or the whole board will snap. Yeah, it has so much pressure.
Yeah,
it'll break.
Wow.
It'll absolutely snap.
So it's just like this tension that's built up over as it's
you can
grown.
Run a flat board through, and by the time you see it, you want it, it's going like this.
Wow.
Just curving, curl right up.
That's,
absolutely.
That's incredible.
Very much so.
It's a hard species to mill. It's a hard species to dry.
Well, the fact that we see for what we're making cast, we're using small pieces, so that helps a lot. We're relieving all that tension.
Yeah.
But even then, it's not always gone. That's why you'll see on the heads of some barrels, they'll be all together and they'll be flat, and it'll do some of this.
Yeah, I've seen some waviness. Yeah,
we've had some of those.
Yeah. I create some of those.
So we used to mill because the oak we're getting in stands, so it's growing straight up, nice and straight most of the time. So we used to mill 14, 16 foot long boards, but then we found we'd come back to the pile after it's dried for a while and all the boards are cockeyed.
Yeah.
So we don't go past 8 feet really at a minimum, usually 7 feet maybe, but we won't go over like 12 feet long.
Right, I think that's what we have out there is 12, which is fine. My perfect choice for what we're doing now is 8 foot.
It's also heavier than hell, so I don't want to torture our employees anymore.
Yeah, I totally
like
agree.
Planting 8-quarter white oak, if I announce that in the morning, everybody's groaning as they walk out of the
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's heavy wood.
It's a backbreaker. Just on either side of the pith, or just like the center heart, those are usually the most valuable slabs. They're the nicest. They're the biggest.
Yep. And you're actually probably the most likely to stay true there.
Yeah, totally.
The ones that's further on the outside, because with a grain in, are going to warp more.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
The ones toward the outside are easier to dry, but they're more unstable. So the flat sawn pieces, where the grain is like a cathedral pattern, that material is super easy to dry. It comes out. The VG material is a lot harder to dry. It dries a lot slower, but it's also more stable.
At the end of the day, it was again time to sit down and talk business. But knowing these guys now, hammering out a deal was the easy part. We were able to get the oak we wanted. But working together with folks like this that share the same values and see the same possibilities for the industry, that's what's really rewarding.
Are you guys grouping from a bunch of different suppliers, or do you know what...
For this stuff?
Yeah, for the oak, or...
I mean,
wherever we can get it.
Yeah, this is what we're down here to figure out. You know.
But nobody has as much as you do.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is.
And we're still shopping because you don't have enough. But we'd like you to get more.
So you need even more.
Yeah, I mean, this is, again, we're planning for years in the future. You know, this is the stuff that was out there on the yard, that will get us part of the way for 1 year. So we'd like, there's some stuff available. We'll be able to manufacture probably enough barrels that we would need this year, the stuff that's sitting out there
right.
We found today. And then there was enough for 80 barrels worth. But, you know, we'll scale up to something like, you know, Still and Todd, something like 200
I could
barrels
easily,
a year
if I could,
at some point.
I could easily do 200 barrels to 300 barrels a year for the next several years, which is in the neighborhood, if you call it 100 feet per barrel, you're not far off. It's a little less, but... You call it that. So I need double what you've got there now.
Okay. So you're...
So you and I have to sit
down
and talk.
You'll need 20 to 30,000 board feet of usable material.
I could use probably 80 to 100,000 feet right now.
Okay. Well, we can be more aggressive.
We shook hands with Aaron and left Gobi feeling pretty optimistic about the future of our Gary Oak program. It was a long haul, winding our way through hundreds of miles of backcountry Oregon, and we had one more long drive home that night to top it off. It gave us a good opportunity, though, to really put into perspective everything we had learned and accomplished.
I think the trip's been really successful. I mean, from the standpoint of, one, being able to source some oak for the barrels we need this year, that was a crucial thing. We accomplished that today. We saw some air-dried wood. We also... bought some wood
that had been air drying for about a year, and that's going to give us our supply a couple years into the future. That's also really exciting. And then the third big thing is forming relationships. You know, Samuel and his son further south, that's been great. But Gobi, especially as a kind of, I mean, they're professionals. This is what they do, and they're really excited about doing this with us. That forming that relationship, I think, was the most important thing that we did.
I totally agree. I totally agree.
Todd, how much wood did we find?
Well, we have at Gobi, we have 13,000 feet that's cut and ready, that's ready to age. We've got another, who knows how many thousands of feet they've got not cut. We got another 1,000 feet coming from our friends down south. So we've got 14,000, did I say 12? Yeah, 14,000 feet.
13,000.
Well, 13, 13 from Gobi
plus the one.
Plus one. Okay. And at Gobi, we have 1,000 feet that's pretty much ready to go.
Right.
And we're gonna snag that right away and get going with it.
And that's perfect, because we were a little bit concerned.
Yes.
For what we would be able to find that's available now. That's basically been air drying for a few years. We got lucky in the past, but, you know, just stumbling on mill owners with stacks of wood air drying, that's not going to happen forever.
Not going to happen very often. We have a couple of avenues we can give it a good shot at. I fully believe we'll get a few more, but it's really important we start putting it away, because we're going to wipe out all those sources of dry wood really fast.
It's really exciting from my standpoint that they can track the source of each log that comes in.
Yeah.
We know we haven't been able to get that in the past. Even the stuff that's out there right now, they couldn't guarantee exactly, you know, where it would come from, because they would put two logs together sometimes on a skid.
Right.
But in the future, you know, they're perfectly willing to tag something all the way through the process and keep things separated and form, you know, individual skids based on individual logs. And that's great. I mean, they get it. That was something that we didn't have to go out of our way to convince them, like, hey, we need to do this thing. And it kind of sounds like, it sounds crazy, but no, they were like, yeah, we understand.
Well, they totally understand it. They were discussing the fact that different colors in the walnut, depending on where it's growing.
Yeah.
You know, they totally get the mineralities.
I think they'd really appreciate, I mean, as we kind of start a mapping project,
yeah,
and looking at the terroirs, I mean, from their perspective as sellers of this wood to all sorts of people, including furniture makers, I'm sure that information can be valuable in other ways.
We've got out here, talking about Salvi Island, our Gobi's got 30 more logs out here. They say it's on a field that's being cleared. And so that's pretty exciting, because we'll know the source of those.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll know exactly where they're coming from. They'll keep them separate. We'll keep them separate all the way through the process, and we'll know what we get from here.
Yep.
So that'll be the first section of our map. And, you know,
it's exciting to think that by the end of this year, we will have been able to source brand new logs from different places with partners that will help us keep them separated and trackable. So
yes,
we can find these things in, you know, much further south where we were yesterday, and maybe another location. And by the end of this year, we can have those put up and air drying as something we can launch into in a project, put whiskey in it in 2020.
And then in not very many more years, we're going to be able to say, we prefer logs from this area
sure.
or that area. And we're going to be able to say, these logs or this forest or this area is much more preferable, or maybe a blend of this and that is what we want. So we're going to be able to learn about a bunch about those things. To me, it's just the awakening of the oak. It's finally, you know, we're finally finding what people really want out of it. And so for so long, it's been nothing.
Yeah, it's exciting for oak to finally have its day.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of how I look at it. It's exciting for oak to have its day. I think that's a good way to put it.